Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and in this episode, we're going to talk about the MBA admissions process and the military. And this may sound a bit like an oddball thing or a bit niche, but the truth is that a lot of military folks end up looking at business school, often as like a transition, you know, from the military into the business world. And I specifically want to focus this episode around like how can military applicants excel in the MBA admissions process at top schools. And while I worked in admissions at Wharton many moons ago, I am not an expert on the military or what kinds of service people have. And so beyond being immensely grateful to those who serve, I'm not an expert. And so because of that, I asked Anna Ivey to join the show as a guest. And Anna, welcome to the show.
Hi, Graham. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice. Anna and I go back a ways, and I wanted to just give our listeners a little background on you. So Anna, you're one of the co-founders of Service to School, which is a nonprofit that provides free admissions counseling and mentorship for veterans who are transitioning into higher education. You also served as the Dean of Admissions at the University of Chicago Law School and have counseled many applicants into college, law school, and the MBA space over the years. So welcome to the show. I'm really hoping you can help us like shed light so that if someone has any military background and is thinking about business school, they'll just listen to this episode and they will be primed for, you know, to sort of excel and take advantage of all the resources that are out there for them. So hopefully you're up to the task.
I'm right there with you, Graham.
Okay. So the first question I had for you is, like, why is business school a smart move or even just a common thing for military folks to consider?
Yeah, of all the different grad school options out there, business school is the most popular and it's a tried and true path. As you know, business schools care very much about leadership training and teamwork skills and all these things that they have actually developed in the military, and now they're transitioning into graduate school, and it's a very natural path. And typically, what they're used to seeing at the top business schools is people coming out of the service academies, then they go do their service, then they go to business school, but increasingly they're very welcoming to enlisted as well. And some schools, including your own, Wharton, are especially fond of special operations folks. So over the years, they've gotten very experienced with evaluating military applicants. So there's sort of a mutual love fest going on there. And if anything, if all the graduate degrees out there, an MBA is also the most versatile, right? Because you can point it in so many different directions and you don't have some big licensing exam at the end that you have to deal with, for example, as you would in law school or medical school. So an MBA is really a fantastic match for a lot of veterans who are thinking about graduate school.
So, and with that, you kind of teed up this next question I had for you, which is like, what are the careers that military to kind of MBA folks often pursue? So if I'm, you know, I'm kind of headed off to business school, like, are there common paths that people take post MBA after they get the degree? And are there certain things that military candidates kind of gravitate towards even in the longer term, or is it sort of anything's possible?
Yeah, in our experience, they go into the same things that their civilian classmates go into as well. That might be financial services, that might be consulting, it could be entrepreneurship in the startup world. So that's very common. And we found that employers are also pretty aggressive in recruiting military students coming out of MBA programs. So it's not a big leap in terms of the skill set that they already bring to the table when they start business school. Then they gain all these extra skills in business school and meet all these very interesting people and connect with all these interesting recruiters or VCs or whatever the case may be. So it's a good environment for them to be in to make that leap into the civilian world. So we haven't seen our service to school MBA folks have some kind of different pattern as far as where they end up. So And those things, as you know, they kind of go in waves, right? So sometimes private equity is really popular, or it's startups are really popular, or investment banking is really popular. These things come and go. So I think that's true for MBA students more generally, and not just a civilian population versus a military population.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, all paths are open. I remember when I was doing admissions and also just interacting with some military folks back at Wharton, I remember there being like a, you know, a stereotype around, oh, military folks are really good at like operations jobs, you know, stuff that's sort of about managing and organizing, and maybe that's where that's coming from when I was asking that question. But it sounds like, you know, in 2020 here, people are kind of doing everything, which is great to hear. Let's talk about some of these stereotypes though. So you've kind of alluded to some things like leadership and stuff, but I'm curious, like, what are the positive stereotypes that admissions officers may have about military applicants? And, you know, you even mentioned recruiters too. Like, so what are the things that they look at and really admire in these candidates?
Yeah. So, you know, we'll call them stereotypes, but I think these are largely accurate, right? So, so we talked about the leadership, the working in teams. Big part of military culture is that there's no focus on the self, right? And that's so countercultural than when you're applying to graduate school, where you have to focus a lot on yourself, right? In the application process. So that's sometimes a hard leap to make, where all of a sudden they have to be selling themselves. But once they get there, they are so good at working with other people and, frankly, just execution, just getting things done. The other great benefit of having military people in the classroom is that they are full-on grown-ups, right? They have lived several lifetimes by the time they're, I don't know, 25, 27, whatever the case may be, right? And so that's always refreshing on any campus, whether it's an MBA program or any other kind of program, that just the maturity and the life experience really rises to the surface. So those are all pluses as far as they're concerned.
And I have to say, are there any negative kind of stereotypes that admissions officers have when it comes to military candidates, like things that people should be aware of here when they're applying?
Yeah. So one thing that I've been looking for when I've been mentoring military applicants is, depending on what kind of role they played in the military, and there are so many different ones, right? I think probably civilians have a somewhat narrower view of what people are actually doing in the military when it's such a diverse range. But one of the things I'm paying attention to is, are they coming from sort of an all-male background? Or do they appear to be coming from an all-male background, even if that's not actually the case? Because, of course, out in business school and out in the real world, they're going to have to be very comfortable working with women. And so I sometimes look for opportunities in the application process to make clear that they're comfortable with that, they're experienced with that. I think that can be a negative and incorrect assumption that some might make about military folks. And I'm saying that about the male applicants, of course. There are wonderful female applicants coming out of the military and applying to business school, but just in terms of numbers, most people coming out of the military are male. So it does skew in that direction. And so if you're actually a female applicant applying to business school, you are the rare bird in that sense, just statistically compared to your male counterparts. So, you know, take advantage of that. That can be a good thing. The other thing that I've seen happen is, and I was alluding to this before, is that business schools can, I think, sometimes be a little dazzled by special operators. And the fact is, you don't have to come from that community to get into business school or to be successful in business school. And so if you're not coming out of that community, make sure to tell your whole story and don't undermine your training or whatever role you had in the military, because there's really room for all of you. You know, when I still lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts, you could always tell when you were running along the Charles River, who the special operators were from Harvard Business School, because they just looked very different from your average student, right? That was also my experience when I was a student at Columbia in the gym. There's so many military veterans at Columbia in undergrad and graduate. And so, you know, there's a certain look that you don't necessarily have when you've just been sitting in a library most of your life or in some cozy environment. So don't undersell yourself. You know, if you're not a Navy SEAL, that's okay. Most people aren't. Most people in top business schools aren't either. That's fine. It's just you have to learn how to help them understand what your role was and what your training was, because whatever it is you were doing, you know, might not be out there as a, you know, in the movies or on TV shows, right? And sort of glamorized in the public consciousness.
Good feedback. I mean, I want to bring up some common mistakes that military applicants might make. So I tried to brainstorm a list, and I thought of, like, you know, one of the things that I always am baffled by is some of the jargon, right, in the military. And, you know, there could be other things too, like, do military candidates come across as being, like, overly rigid, or do they sometimes have, like, unrealistic goals? Like, they're going to move from, you know, combat engineer to venture capitalist by just spending 2 years in business school? Or, you know, are there other things that make it challenging? Like, are there common mistakes made? Any thoughts on that stuff?
Yeah, jargon is certainly an issue, because if you've been in this sort of closed loop for a long time, or during a very formative period in your life, you just speak a different language. And military language is a different language. It took me a long time to get familiar with it, and I'm sure there's still plenty that I have yet to learn. And so translating your experience and translating what it is you want to communicate to admissions officers is very important. And when we're in our own little bubbles, and, you know, you're in a bubble, I'm in a bubble, we all have our bubbles. So if you're coming out of a military bubble, it really helps to have a civilian perspective, a civilian person look at your materials to make sure that it is actually understandable to your target audience. And that's something that service to school helps with a lot, is to translate that very military specific way of communicating to an audience of civilians. And civilian admissions officers are fantastic. They want more military people, but a lot of them, or I should say some of them, really don't know that much about how the military works. Things that a service person would think is so basic that everyone must know it. I mean, I remember an admissions officer from a school you've all heard of asking me in private, you know, would, this was for undergraduate admissions, asking, would an officer ever be applying to our program? And I realized she didn't really understand the distinction between officer and enlisted, let alone warrant officers and some of these other nuances. So, you know, part of what we do at Service to School is also to try to educate admissions officers about some of these distinctions and how to evaluate all this whole range of achievements that someone might have from a military career that they might not necessarily know how to appreciate because they just don't understand the significance of this thing or that thing. So Service to School sort of sits in the middle and tries to help both sides understand each other, basically, is what it comes down to.
Right.
Yeah, so jargon, always, always important to be thinking about. And that's true for other people coming from other fields as well. I mean, you know, I think everyone is susceptible to using jargon from whatever their field is. But for the military, you know, the military loves acronyms. You know, that comes up in recommendations from the military, all these acronyms that just don't mean anything, you know, to a civilian person. So it comes out, it can be an issue in a couple of different places in the application. And those are always good to look out for.
Any other things that are kind of really common mistakes made by applicants that are, you know, have this military background?
Yeah, we touched on it a little bit before, but that really countercultural expectation to sell yourself and to talk about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And to their credit, business schools care very much about how you work in a team and how you work with other people. So it's not as if they don't value that. But when you are applying, you have to be able to talk about yourself. And so what I tell people is, you know what, you don't have to be comfortable with it. It doesn't have to feel good. That's okay. You know, but this is what you have to do, whether it feels comfortable or not. And it's not the culture you come from. And that's okay. And that's part of that transition into the civilian world, is you're really leaping from one culture to another in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So I think I want to sort of delve into some very specific areas that military applicants might face. I was just kind of curious, like how do they, as you kind of point out, you have to sell yourself, you have to talk about your background, and schools ask for all kinds of, anecdotes and examples of experience. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, like, how do military candidates deal with, like, battlefield stuff, or even, really touchy subjects like PTSD or even politics, right? I mean, like, there's just this sort of potential for kind of danger yes. zones. And I was wondering, what do you tell people when they're dealing with all that?
Yeah. Well, I would say to all applicants, it's probably good to avoid politics in general. Unless you're coming from a political career, in which case you can't really avoid it and you can't really hide, who you were working for or what issues you were working on right. or, what right. side you are on. But unless you're coming out of the world of politics, I would say you don't really need to go there. It doesn't benefit you. So putting politics aside, it is not off the table to talk about a traumatic experience. That is not going to shock anyone reading an application. And believe it or not, civilians write about traumatic experiences as well.
Yeah.
They're just, not military kinds of traumas, right? There are all kinds of traumas out there. So I wouldn't shy away from it too much. But yeah, there's a line you walk. And then sometimes when I've been looking at people's essays, for example, sometimes I recommend dialing things a little back a little bit, if it's being very, very blunt and somewhat matter of fact and a little bit no big deal about, how many people you killed in this or that
right.
firefight. Sure. It's a very fuzzy line. It's not a hard and fast one. But again, it's good to have a civilian look at your materials just to get a sense of whether that is beyond sort of the normal range of things that they might be expecting. As far as mental health issues go, again, just as in the civilian world, it's not something that's going to shock admissions officers. And if anything, they don't consider it stigmatizing to have mental health issues. So many people do. I mean, if they excluded people with mental health issues, graduate schools would be, thin on the ground. But the key thing is, if it does come up in some part of the admissions process, you want to make clear that you've recognized it and you're tackling it. It's not that you're not allowed to have these problems or these issues. But really what you're trying to signal to the admissions officer is, you don't have to worry about me. I'm not going to be a problem for you when I'm at your school
right.
because of these issues. So it's not something you have to dance around, truly. Now, if it's not relevant to your application and the stories you're telling, then you don't really need to go there either, right? So it's a judgment call.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're making some really great points about the fact that, a lot of these rules apply to any applicant, whether it's politics or dealing with trauma or even mental health issues. I think, there's this fine line. But you, as you correctly point out, I think this is a really salient point, is that you don't want to speak about a kind of issue you don't want to create the impression that the committee should be worried about what will happen to you when you arrive on campus and there's like a ton of pressure in that first semester or something. So I think it's sort of a fine line to walk. Like you said, you don't want to paint yourself as maybe being a problem when you arrive or something, right?
Yeah. And as I say, that's true for civilians too.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are all kinds of, especially around disclosures, if they're criminal things that applicants have to disclose or disciplinary issues, that's true for civilian applicants too. And as an admissions officer, sometimes you have to give that some real thought as far as, is this an ongoing problem or is this something that, we can trust this person to handle?
Right. And I think we've done, a number of episodes of the Clear Admit podcast, and we've talked about all kinds of admissions strategy and things. And one of the things that you're underlining that I think is really important as well is that, your reader is a civilian, right? And so it's sort of knowing your audience a little bit too. And I think in many cases, just getting a handle on like who's reading these files and what are they, what's their background? Because that can be helpful too.
At the same time, I don't want to overstate it either, because part of what makes service to school so effective, for example, is that it is a peer-to-peer model ultimately. Mm-hmm. So your mentors and the people sort of down in the weeds helping you with all these ins and outs of the application are themselves veterans who have gone through the process already and have already made that transition to those schools. And so that is so valuable, because I can promise you, when I was advising military applicants without the benefit of service to school colleagues, that's hard too, to advise them properly from just the civilian experience. So that peer-to-peer element really counts for a lot, not least because you can look at these people and say, okay, they did it. Yeah. You know, it's possible. I have this playbook in front of me, you know, and if there were one group of people I would say we would love to see more of, it would be female service members, because what we see a lot of is you'll have a male West Pointer say, I'm going to do my 5 years and then I go to Wharton because that's what my buddy did and now he makes a lot of money or whatever, you know, right. whatever the narrative is. And I get the sense that women coming out of the military aren't really having those conversations, or not to the same degree that their male peers are. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think there's an op-ed to be written about that. And there's some people doing some fantastic work in that area and fantastic research. But if anything, I think we would encourage some of the female applicants to aim high and have those conversations that their male peers are having with their networks at these schools.
Good feedback. Yeah, I think I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit more about, you know, service to school. I mean, and just generally, like, what is your advice for, I mean, you've given some really terrific advice on what candidates need to be aware of and such, and how schools look at military. But I'm also wondering, like, what is your sort of overall advice for a military candidate that is navigating the MBA admissions process? I mean, it sounds like they clearly should take advantage of service to school. It's free. But are there any other, like, what do you want to say about service to school? And are there other things that they should be thinking about as they look for signposts and help kind of along the way?
Yeah, I would say, and as with so many things in life, don't wait until the last minute, right? if you take advantage of some runway and some lead time, then your mentors at Service to School can really help you get your ducks in a row. You know, if you show up in September and are hoping to apply round one, you know, to business school, or even round two, you still have to take a GMAT, you know, you still have to work on your essays, you still have to line up your recommenders, you still have to figure out what schools are a good fit for you. Maybe you've been able to visit these places personally, maybe you haven't. Right now, that's not even an option, right? So it's not something ideally that you want to rush through. So it's a good idea to start thinking about these things and getting organized and figure out what your timeline is and what your action items are over the course of that timeline, so that you're not, you know, you're not cutting corners, you're not trying to rush through something, not least because, you know, you're not doing this solo. And so when you're collaborating with other people, whether it's your mentors or your recommenders, for example, you don't want them to have to pull an all-nighter to, to turn something around in 24 hours either, right? That's part of that sort of teamwork element. So take advantage of lead time, because that can only be your friend.
Got it. Just in case our listeners are not super familiar with, like, service to school, do you want to just talk about, like, how it works? I mean, this in the sense, because it sounds like a great thing. It's free. And so, yeah, how does it work? How do you get a mentor? And are there other things that you can do if you aren't matched with a mentor or something?
Yeah. So it's 100% virtual. So our mentors are scattered all over the globe, as are our applicants, of course. And so we are completely set up to work with people no matter where they are. You know, they might be working out of a container in Djibouti, or they might be on a nuclear submarine and they only have access to the internet for, you know, these communications once a week or something. We're cool with that. We've got all kinds of procedures in place, and we have you know, there's all this really interesting and great technology out there that lets us work with people no matter where they are or what situation they're in. So if you come to service to school, we do have an intake process from our full-time staff. So that's all they do is manage that process and then have oversight for the rest of that cycle and making sure that the applicant is paired with an appropriate mentor and everything's running smoothly. Depending on what the goals are, they will look very carefully at what kind of mentor might be the most appropriate for you. So if you're hoping to go to Stanford Business School, you know, they might look for someone who's taken that kind of path versus someone maybe who wants to focus on, I don't know, a very narrow niche, sports marketing, and they're not really focused on a specific school. But, you know, we've got a wide range of mentors out there. We call them ambassadors. There are service to school ambassadors. And so a lot of thought goes into the pairing process. And, you know, it's a funnel like any other organization, meaning, you know, a lot of people contact us and some people are more serious about it than others, right? Others are just sort of testing the waters and they go off and do something else, which is fine, mm-hmm. right? But there's this funnel and kind of as we are working with people in the intake process, we get a sense of, yes, you know, they're really ready to do this and they're ready to do it, you know, now in the foreseeable future. And so then we get that ball rolling. And then they work closely with their mentors throughout that process. And we have different kinds of check-in mechanisms to make sure that the applicant is doing their part and the mentor is doing their part. And I would also emphasize that you're not just getting the benefit of that mentor. I mean, you're really getting the benefit of the organization and the people who have gone through it and who are running it. We have such a great leadership team and they're doing such great work. So you're not restricted to the expertise or the support of just one person from service to school. And ideally, you'll take advantage of service to school even after you've gone off to business school because it is a community. And these are relationships, hopefully, that you're going to continue cultivating and take advantage of while you're in business school and after you get out of business school. And to your earlier point, it is absolutely free. There's no money involved. We do ask that if you've benefited from service to school in your path to business school, that at some point you pay it forward by agreeing to serve as an ambassador to someone who's now just coming up through the process. Mm-hmm. It's not something you have to do right away. It's not something you have to do while you're in school. You can if you want to. And if you end up not volunteering in that capacity, we're not going to hunt you down and wrap your knuckles, you know. But there is that expectation that there will be a service component where you basically pay it forward to another applicant coming up through the system. And that's how we scale our peer-to-peer model. That's how we're able to serve as many people as we do. Because we started out small, and it's been really gratifying to see those numbers of applicants grow over the years as we've built out not just our ambassador team, but also the whole infrastructure and the technology and our procedures for managing a larger population of ambassadors and applicants.
Yeah, it sounds great. And I just want to mention, in case people aren't aware or haven't Googled it, it's just service2school.org. So the number two.
Yes.
If you want to check out the website. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I did want to mention, I think, you know, military candidates can also, in most schools have a military, like a veterans club.
Yeah.
That can be a good resource for people to kind of tap into. But clearly this community of service to school seems like a gold mine in terms of just plugging in right away and getting, you know, as you say, talking to people who've been there, done that, and can, you know, sort of light the path for you.
Yeah.
Are there any final thoughts that you have for, you know, veterans or, you know, military folk in general who are, you know, thinking about this and hoping to find success at some of the very best business schools in the world?
Yeah. So, you know, the reality is that the kind of stereotypical person coming out of West Point and then ending up at, you know, Harvard Business School, for example, those people are honestly going to do fine without us, right? They already have that network. They already have access to former classmates or other alums that are there. And we're happy to work with them, of course. In fact, that's how we started out. We started out working with people applying just to business school, and then we expanded to undergrad, and we made a really big push to include more enlisted among our applicants, because frankly, enlisted is less likely to have that kind of network in place already at these fancy pants schools.
Right.
So I would say, you know, we love the Service Academy folks, you know, please come hang out with us, and we'd love to work with you. But especially if you're enlisted, if you have not gone to one of the academies, you've taken a different path, you're exactly the kind of person who I think most benefits from service to school, because we can provide that kind of network and that kind of, you know, shoot off an email and ask the question and talk to people who've gone through the experience. You know, if you don't already have that network in place and you don't know these people at who are already students at that school have already graduated from that school, that's fine. That's exactly why we exist. So we're happy to see all stripes, as it were, but do not feel discouraged or dissuaded in any way from coming to talk to us if you're not that particular stereotype of who's going to business school out of the military.
Got it. Yeah. Well, Anna Ivy, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us and to talk about, you know, kind of tips for military candidates, as well as this special program that Service to School offers. Sounds like a no-brainer for people to kind of learn more about. And yeah, just thanks again for all your time. It was really a pleasure catching up with you on this topic.
It's my pleasure. And let me say a few concluding nice words about Clear Admit. I've dealt with Clear Admit in a number of capacities for over a decade now, Graham?
Yeah,
oh my goodness, you know, time flies. I have only good things to say about it. Their website is such a wealth of information and community. Again, you know, there are so many resources out there that are easy to access and don't cost you anything. Take advantage of that. It's all out there. Clear Admit is one of the best in the field, if not the best. You can trust these guys. You can trust the information they're putting out there. And, you know, you don't have to look at just one source. So, you know, we encourage you, if you're working with Service to School, it's completely fine to go take advantage of the resources at Clear Admit as well. So we're glad you're out there doing the work you're doing.
Yeah, and that's the feeling is absolutely mutual. I mean, yeah, we absolutely happy to direct military candidates to, you know, to your site, and glad if they're spending time on our site as well. So appreciate it, Anna. And yeah, for our listeners, stay tuned. We got more episodes of the Clear Admit podcast coming your way. And yeah, thanks again, Anna, and stay safe and healthy.
Thanks, Graham. You too.
Uncertain times.